And good morning. It is a Getaway Friday, Friday, July the 23rd, 2021, 15, coming up on 16 minutes past the hour. You're tuned into The Pastor Spot, a weekly radio ministry of Community Christian Fellowship that can be heard right here on WWGH Radio every Friday morning at 11:10 a.m., repeated on Sunday morning at 8:10 a.m., and Wednesday afternoon at 3:10 p.m. Also, go to the website, WWGH1071.com, and look up any show in the program archive section dating back to March of 2018. Also, the Community Christian Fellowship Sunday service airs on this station every Sunday now at 12:15 p.m., so check that out. We now turn the program over to the host of our show, Pastor Steve Whitaker. Pastor, how are you?
Good morning, Scott, and good morning, Frank, and good morning, listening audience. I'm good to have you all here today. Another beautiful week. The weather's been great. You know, we don't get much of this in Ohio anymore, I don't think. Like, we always say things weren't like they used to be, but I think they kind of were. We just forget and add in. Because you always say, boy, we always had so much snow when we were kids. I think we still have snow. Don't you?
I mean, could you believe last Saturday when it was 68 degrees in July? I couldn't believe that.
But it felt good, didn't it?
It felt good.
Unless you were swimming.
Yeah, that wouldn't have been good.
I'm Pastor Steve Whitaker at Community Christian Fellowship in Prospect, Ohio. I'm here this morning with Scott Spears, our program director, and with Frank Robinson, who's joined us this morning also. We are at Community Christian Fellowship is where our church is, and we're at 209 East Water Street in Prospect. Love to have you come visit us. Our Sunday mornings start with a 9:30 Bible school hour, and then we have a 10:30 worship service. And, of course, you can listen to that here live at 12:15. That plays again at 12:15 on Sundays. So good to have you here today. And I want to talk about something interesting today. Really, you think about it, we're supposed to be talking on this show about current events and about how they relate biblically. What should we do and how should we relate those particular things to what's the Bible say about them and what our outcome can be as we do that. And I was thinking this morning, actually I was thinking yesterday about this program, and I was thinking about, you know, this subject that came up with employment right now. And employment is at a all-time, I say that we're in beg status. People are begging for employees. I can name several places just here in Marion that are offering people bonus, or not just sign-on bonuses, but people that will refer them a referral fees up to $400 just for referring someone to their company to get a job if they come to it. But it's kind of difficult. The trucking industry is really hurting right now. Some gas stations can't get gas, and it's not because they don't have gas, because they can't get anyone to haul it. I heard on the TV the other morning that we're 60,000 drivers short in America, truck drivers right now, and I'm seeing some of the things they're offering, and I'm thinking, wow, you know, it's amazing. I wish back in the day when I did those things that those kind of dollars were there, but for some reason, they can't get people to go to work. And I want to read a passage in the Bible, and the question that comes up from this is, are you a good steward of your money? Are you a good steward of what God has given you? And some of you are familiar with this. It's in Matthew chapter 25, and it begins in verse 14. It's called the Parable of the Talents. And it reads, I'm reading a small print Bible today, so bear with me. It may be a struggle for this whole guy. Again, it will be like a man going on a journey who called his servants and entrusted his property to them. To one he gave 5 talents of money, and to another 2 talents, and to another 1 talent, each according to his ability. Then he went on his journey. So, first of all, you understand, he gave each one of them money according to what their abilities were. You know, not everyone has the same abilities, but he gave them money to entrusted the money to them according to their ability. Then he went on his journey. The man who had received the 5 talents went at once and put his money to work and gained 5 more. So also the one with the 2 talents gained 2 more. But the man who had received 1 talent went off, dug a hole in the ground, and hid his master's money. After a long time, the master of the servants returned and settled accounts with them. The man who had received the 5 talents brought the other 5. "Master," he said, "you entrusted me with 5 talents. See, I have gained 5 more. His master replied, "Well done, good and faithful servant. You have been faithful with a few things. I will put you in charge of many things. Come and share your master's happiness." The man of the 2 talents also came. "Master," he said, "you entrusted me with 2 talents. See, I have gained 2 more. His master replied, "Well done, good and faithful servant. You have been faithful with a few things. I will put you in charge of many things. Come and share your master's happiness." Then the man who had received just 1 talent came. "Master," he said, "I knew that you are a hard man, harvesting where you have not sown, gathering where you have not scattered." In other words, this is a pretty tough businessman he knows he's dealing with. "Gathering where you have not scattered seed. So I was afraid and went out and hid your talent in the ground. See, here is what belongs to you." So he has the whole thing. He didn't lose any of it. His master replied, "You wicked, lazy servant. You knew that I harvest where I have not sown and gather where I have not scattered seed. Well, then, you should have put your money on deposit with the bankers so that when I returned, I would have received back with interest." You know, why'd you put it in the ground? At least put it where I'm going to get a few dollars. "Take the talent from him and give it to the one who has the 10 talents. For everyone who has will be given more, and he will have an abundance. Whoever does not have, even what he has will be taken from him. And throw that worthless servant outside into the darkness, where there will be weeping and gnashing of teeth." So, seems kind of harsh. And it is just a story. It's a parable of a talent. It's not something that Jesus did. It's just a parable. And there's a principle usually when there's a parable. And it is, take what you've been giving and do something with it. Take whatever you have, whatever God has given you, whatever talent, personally, in this case, talents versus money, but whatever he has, and multiply. Do something with it. Make something of it. And as we see today in our society, it's gotten so difficult, especially during this last COVID year. There has been so much relief money pumped out there. And dare I say, a lot of it isn't needed. There are people that truly need relief. And I don't run in wealthy circles, but in the circles that I do run in, most people are telling me, "Man, I didn't need this money. You know, I didn't lose my job. Things weren't difficult for me. But it came anyway." Now, I would encourage them to use it wisely. If that's the case, take it out and use it and do something wise with that and better yourself. Don't use it for, "Let's just go have fun with this money." But the point is that while people would get one stimulus, they're waiting on a next one. Or while the unemployment was coming into people and they were getting the bonus on top of it, I had more people tell me that, "Man, I'm raking in more money than I ever have. This is great." My question is, what did you do with it? And then when you go on down the line to some people that say, "Hey, look, I really didn't want to work anyway. I'm just going to hang on and wait on the next one. And wait on the next one." They're not going to have anything. It's not going to get better. It's going to get worse. And right now, jobs are out there. The opportunity is unbelievable. The training opportunities. I've been looking into some of the jobs. And not for myself, but looking. And these companies aren't just saying, "Come work for us." They're saying, "Come work for us and we will train you." I mean, you come in with no talent whatsoever, with no ability for this job, for no training, we will train you, and here's the path we'll put you on, and here's what we're going to pay you. I would encourage people to do that. I think that we run into the problem sometimes if, you know the old adage, if you give a man a fish a day, he'll sit and wait on the fish or whatever, and if you teach a man to fish. Well, how does that go? I forget.
Let's see. Teach a man how to fish.
And he'll eat.
And he'll eat.
For life.
For life. But you give him a fish and he'll wait for the next.
You know what? Yeah, whatever that is. But you get the gist of it.
Yeah.
And the gist of it is just that. We have to get to a point where it's okay when we need to help people when they're in need. That we truly do. But we need to be teaching people to fish and making sure that they do. And what I mean by that is, don't keep the handout going if there's not going to be some mark to meet that can be met. We can't keep continuing this way as a society. I mean, I never thought I would see the day in America when employers are begging for employees and they can't get anyone. Isn't it amazing?
Well, it's interesting because what I've learned, because I was curious about this myself when I started to see these signs go up. It's interesting that these businesses are offering bonuses and they're even advertising, which used to be something they did not do. They're saying, we will pay you this an hour for this job. But if you go in and interview for these positions, you will find out that the standard has not changed. They'll still turn you away. If you come in dressed poorly, if you come in and speak poorly, if you have a criminal background, if you can't pass a drug test, a lot of these places, which are corporately owned, which is where I see a lot of the people wanting gas stations, grocery stores, department stores, they're still turning people away. And I know they're still turning people away who just do bad interviews, don't even have the drug issue.
I'm going to sound mean when I say this, but shouldn't they?
They should, but I think that's what's happening. I think, you know...
That's not why they're not filling positions.
Well, I think a lot of positions that I have seen were created because people all this... What the pandemic, I think, did was it created a need to go to the grocery store. It created a need to eat out instead of going inside the restaurant. You don't see a lot of businesses looking for servers right now. When I go up and down 95, I don't see a lot of that, but I see KFC, I see McDonald's, I see Wendy's, all asking for work, because people are not going in places quite again yet.
I think they're starting to. I mean, if you go into... I've been in... what's the one over here on 95?
Steak and Shake.
Anyway, and they were full the other day. But I was talking to someone that had gone into one of the local restaurants, and they said it's going to be about an hour wait. And they said, there's hardly anyone in there. And they said, yeah, but we only had two people show up today.
Did you see the story last week? And I don't want to say the store, but it's a corporate store. It's not one of the big box stores, but it's a corporate store. And somebody went in, and the shelves were empty. And they said, they thought immediately, you know, pandemic mind, that there's a shortage because the shelves are empty. Are you going out of business or something of that nature? And they said, no, our staff walked out. And the truck, we had to refuse the truck because we don't have a stock room big enough to put it in there. And we can't get the stuff on the shelf because somebody's got to be out here watching the register.
So why are they doing this?
Because I think they're overwhelmed. I think these staffs are getting far more hours than they signed up for when they started these jobs.
Because they can't get people.
Because they can't get help.
Because they can't get help. And it's interesting, the... you know, the pay scale in some of them is just unbelievable what they're willing to do, and especially in the trucking industry, it's gone a little bit crazy. I still hold a Class A CDL with a tanker endorsement that I've kept for years, and because of that, and how they find out I have that's beyond me. But you know, computers today, I have been getting bombarded with people wanting me to apply to this trucking company and that trucking company. And as you know, there's no way I could drive a truck today. Being a pastor, that'd be kind of hard. I suppose with technology, I could do a lot of it from the cab, but who knows. But I guess what I'm saying is that, you know, there comes a time when people have to step up and take advantage of what's put in front of them, just like these men did with the talents. Okay, one was obviously a real go-getter. And he got five talents and immediately went out and said, man, I watch what I can do with this. And the second one didn't quite have as much talent, so he got less talents. He got two. But he immediately went out too and says, I think I can double this before the master gets back. And then the last one took it and said, man, I'll tell you what, I don't want to get in trouble with that master. I'm just going to bury it, forget about it. And I think that it's important to take what we've been giving and do something with it. We've all got talent to a point. My son was telling me the other day that They have interviewed 43 people where he works. 43 people. And I don't know how many jobs they've offered out of those 43, but I suppose there have been quite a few. And he said not one person has called back wanting the job. And part of it is because now I know they're saying with unemployment that they will check to make sure you're doing an interview. But it doesn't say you have to take the job if you're offered. But out of the jobs they've offered, no one has taken the jobs. And I know where he works. It's not that difficult of an environment. It's work, and it's hot sometimes, and it's 8 hours, but you're going to get paid every Friday, and it's going to be there, and it's not bad money. So I don't know why people wouldn't take those jobs unless they felt they could get by without taking the job, or maybe. But I think that, you know, we live in a society today where there's so many opportunities. All you hear is lack of opportunity everywhere, and I don't buy it. Now I'll be honest with you, and I want to talk to young people here, and some older people. Pay attention to what you look like. If I'm going to take money out of my company that I worked very hard to build, and I've got to protect my image as a company because I'm still trying to build it, and I got somebody coming in, and I'm sorry, but if they're tattooed from head to foot, and they're slouched back in a chair and says, yeah, what are you offering me? I'm not hiring that guy.
Well, you know what has happened, to be honest. I mean, I have sat in on job interviews recently, and all these corporations, factories, from fast food places to factories, the questions they ask you on a job interview now are so homogenized. And I wonder if this was my first job, and I had to come up with the answers. What's your best trait? What's your worst trait?
Half of them don't know what a trait means.
No, and what's your worst trait?
Because they're not intelligent. Because trait's not a word we use a lot these days.
No, but I mean, if you went to a job interview and somebody said, well, what's your worst quality? What would you? You're trying to get the job. They don't know you. What would you say? But that's a question everybody asks on a job interview
what's
now.
What's your worst quality?
What's your worst quality?
Excuse me.
Did I overreact when somebody asked me that question? I mean, I don't know what you say.
I said, give me a couple sheets of paper. I gotta make a list.
Well, it's a funny thing because what they're trying to, they're weeding out people. If you know what, if these people really were this hard up for jobs right now, they just hire people in, and they'd say, you know, if you want to do a drug test, that's fine. Background check, that's fine. Skip this interview. If they do the job well after training, they're gonna have to train anyway. Fine. If they're not,
but you know what's happened. This is what's happened so much in our corporate world. We've managed ourselves to death.
Exactly.
We have way too much management. And people coming out of college and jumping into management jobs that have no clue what it's like in the real world to manage people. And then because of that, they want everybody to package. We package everything today. So we get all of these companies that are experts in interviewing and how we should interview. And they put together this list of questions that you ask that's supposed to achieve a certain response. And then you have a level of percentages that the interviewer has. When the interviewer may not even know why he's asking that question. But it's part of this prepackaged thing they've gotten from a company that's an expert at how you're supposed to interview people to get to this certain point.
Well,
and where'd the personal stuff go out of it, you know?
Well, I won't say the factory's name, but it's a big factory here in town, and they're constantly hiring. And they were long before the pandemic. They're always looking for people because they're a subsidiary of a bigger company. And I had a friend who wanted to switch jobs once. So he goes on the job interview. And this interview was not really an interview. This was a computer test. And but you could fail it. You could fail that computer test. I just went, you know, to the place with him and watched him do it. I was shocked because I thought, boy, you're that hard up for people, and you're timing somebody for a factory job, where basically your job was to take a bumper and put it on, which I'm sure they would train you to do, put it on the start of the line, send it down. You had to take a computer test answering something like 50 questions. And it's based on time and correct answers to do that job. Now, how in the world do you expect to fill these positions? There are some people that just aren't good at that.
No, there aren't. And but I do believe that we do have a shortage that isn't just an interviewing process problem. And it's not, the companies do need people. They're begging for them. So I think that, you know, yes, there's problems in maybe how we interview and are we giving everybody the fair shot at it. But believe me, these companies are hurting for people. I think they're going to take in that person and give them a shot in most cases. But, you know, a lot of people are going into interviews not caring if they get the job. And it's not, common sense tells you, hey, look, I'm going in to interview with Scott Spears today. And common sense should tell you to wash your face, comb your hair, even if you don't have very nice clothes, find the best that you have. You know what? Scrape up a dollar from somebody and walk by the Goodwill and pick up a decent shirt. Whatever may be that thing that you need to do, and go for an interview. Look, they're hiring you. You're not hiring them. And I think part of the interviewing process today, part of the problem is when I talk to a lot of people that interview, the main thing people want to know is this. How much are you paying me? How much are my benefits and what are my days off? And not, the question should be, what will you have me do here? Can I convince you that I can try, even if I don't know it, that I'll do the best I can do for you? Am I selling myself or I'm telling you to sell your job on me? Does that make sense?
Yeah, I mean, I think that's right. I think it's a very interesting idea. Let's see, it might be. Good morning, you're on with the pastor. Hello? Yeah. Go ahead. I think we lost him. But it is an interesting thing because one of the questions I hear on a lot of interviews is, what do you want to make?
Yeah, what's that all about?
I don't know. That's a very strange thing.
Yeah, maybe.
Yeah, well, maybe this time they'll get through. You're on the air. Go ahead.
Yeah, hey, Scott.
Yeah.
Yeah, you guys are sitting there talking about people not working.
Right.
Okay. A lot of people are not going to go to work at 20 hours a week at minimum wage when they can stay at home and make more by law of welfare. And they don't make enough money by working after taxes and all paying out to pay their rent, utilities, or buy groceries. They need to, something needs to be done with the wage situation and not only the part-time jobs.
Well, I thank you for calling in.
Hire somebody, hire full-time for people who can at least make a living and can pay their bills.
Well, thank you for calling. So what do you make of that thought, Pastor, from our caller there?
Well, Frank and I were actually talking about this yesterday, about wages and what they are and how hard it is, especially if you're paying any kind of child support or whatever it is. And what is federal minimum wage now? Does anybody know?
It's not $8 yet.
It's not $8.
No, it's still right under $8.
There's very few companies that are paying $8.
Right.
Some of those would be server positions where they're getting tips would be my guess. But most companies out there today are I would say an average low start would be $10.
Probably
10, and most of the factories out there, I know that you can go through like a Deco in those places and probably get somewhere between 15 and 20.
I would say a little, 15's about right.
$15 an hour, okay, $15 an hour, which is way above minimum wage. Everybody says nobody can live on minimum wage, which I don't think they can either, but there's actually not many places that are paying flat minimum wage without something else to compensate it or offset it, tips.
Well, so, I wonder full-time versus part-time, because that's been an interesting thing, too. I noticed that almost all these, except factories are usually full-time, but all these other places never really tell you until you go on the job interview. And I know that as far as the grocery stores and department stores, they're not full-time positions. They're part-time.
And that's tough.
Yeah.
But I would say this. If you're a single person and you need to make that kind of money, you don't need. I mean, that's what you'll be offered, that kind of money. I think that you can try to, even if it's part-time, find something else part-time. People say, what do you mean? Yeah, I got to work two jobs. Let me tell you something. When I was young and I had a young family, this cat worked two jobs and sometimes three. The point is, people have to be willing until they get on their feet, establish themselves, and start making money. They have to be willing to make the cuts they need to cut. I'm sorry, don't tell me when you're paying $700 a month for cigarettes. Did you hear what I just said? $700 a month for cigarettes, and then not to count the booze and the bag of weed, don't tell me that you can't make it, because you can. Don't tell me you can't pay your rent when you're paying that kind of money for cigarettes. And I'm sorry, I know that you know, hey, I was a smoker years ago. I know how hard it was to quit, but you know what I did?
But you know what is strange in this whole thing? Is that the job market is absolutely, everybody wants to hire people. But the other thing that's going up are rents. Now, you would think if these people are...
Oh, they're going up horribly.
They're going up horribly. So it's even more difficult.
You know why they're going up horribly? Because the people that own the properties are scared to death we're going to have another rent moratorium.
Well,
that buried a lot of people.
Well, but I think that if you can make it on your unemployment plus whatever it was, 300 or 600, and somebody's offering you less money to go back to work, and your landlord is raising your rent, you're probably going to think twice about that.
Mm-hmm. But see, it goes back to this parable about the talents. The guy, believe it or not, the guy that was given one talent was given the most opportunity of any of them. Because he was given the opportunity, that one talent, to prove that he could do something. What would happen if the master came back and he had turned that one talent into three? He'd have said, I'm going to give you much more and more, and he's going to give you that opportunity. The point is, and my whole point of what we was talking about this morning is, we have to take what opportunity we're given, even if it's a small amount of opportunity, and we have to build on it. I can't look at Scott Spears and say, look, Scott's making $90,000 a year, which I know you're not making that. But anyway, Scott's making $90,000 a year, and if I can't make $90,000 a year, it's not fair. I'm not going to do it. And that seems to be the attitude. I should have everything that everyone else has because, after all, it's not fair they have it and I don't.
Well, what I can't figure out...
I guess I'm coming from a place of, I know what it's like to be dirt poor. I know what it was like when I was a kid and was poor. And I know what it was like as a young adult with a family and not to know where the next meal is going to come from without thinking in my head, what can I do to go generate some cash to make sure that meal's being done? So I'm not talking coming from a place of privilege. I'm coming from a place of know what it's like to pull yourself up and trust God for the next day each and every day and take what little bit you've been given and to build on it. And that's what we have to do in this country if we're poor.
Well, it's interesting to me because there are two things that I know are factual right now. And one, I do see these people offering more wage and more incentive than they've ever offered before. But I know that everybody did not lose their job during the pandemic. And
very few did.
Right. And it's interesting to me...
Well, not very few, but a low percentage.
It was a low percentage. And what's interesting to me is nobody is leaving their job to go take one of these jobs for more money, which used to be a thing that people did.
Mm-hmm.
They're not. You know, all of a sudden these people are bumping up the pays. I'm sure it's more than some people were making before the pandemic and still are making who never left their job, but they're not willing to switch their job. They're not doing this. I think that's interesting. And another thing that I think is absolutely fascinating is people shopping for you in the grocery store and people going to the fast food places. Those people aren't hurting for jobs. Those people are hiring people by the truckload,
mm-hmm.
and they're getting them.
It's interesting. I know somebody that worked for a company that offered they had been where they're at for 8 years, and they started offering people coming in the same wage this person was making after 8 years. So then what the company had to do was they had to go back and adjust all their employees, and even though their employees were never out of work for a day, they got huge wage increases just because of what they were offering the people coming in the door. And I think a lot of that's going on. But I'm just encouraging people, get out there and take advantage of them. Take advantage of those jobs that are out there.
Go ahead, caller. You're on with the pastor.
Well, I just want to thank the pastor because I agree with him 100%. I was raised by a single mother. My first job was at age 14, and I put myself through college. I think the problem today is people think the world owes them a living, and they're not willing to do what they need to do in order to put themselves in the position that other people have managed to put themselves in.
What? Yeah, yeah, I understand that. I was the second half of my youth. I was raised by a single mother. I lost my father at a young age.
Right.
And so I know where you're coming from. And, you know, people talk about going to college. I remember I left for college And I turned around and came back before college even started because the money wasn't going to come through, and I didn't know what to do. And I had a wonderful girlfriend back home, and I went back and hit the workforce. We saved college for a later date.
Right. Sure. But, yep.
But you have to be willing to do what you, between paper routes. I was pouring concrete when I was 15 in the summer. And, you know, that's hard, tough work.
It is. I know where you're coming from. I know exactly where you're coming from. Anyway, I just wanted to comment and say that I agree with everything you're saying this morning, and I like listening to your show.
Well, thank you. Keep listening.
Thank you.
Bye-bye.
Bye.
You know, I have all the sympathy in the world for people that are struggling and people that don't understand. A lot of kids today, they just haven't had the guidance they need. They've been left, a lot, many of them, to fend for themselves at home because we have two parents working and it's hard. And I don't for one minute not have sympathy for those that struggle. I really do. If I didn't have sympathy, we wouldn't do some of the outreaches we do with the church so heavily. And I do want to give people every opportunity myself, if I can, to make something better with their life. And, you know, God intended a beautiful life for all of us. And the reason that we're not experiencing that beautiful life is not because he didn't intend it. It's because of what goes on around us that keeps us from it. And if we can get past that point and begin to recognize our own self-worth. See, I drive my worth. One thing that was really instilled in me as a young person was it didn't matter what anyone else thought of me. I knew that God made me special. So in his eyes, I was good. I may not be the best kid in the world. I may be a bad boy that he just straightened a few things out. But God made me special, and I knew that. And it didn't matter that I was not a very big kid. It didn't matter that I didn't have any money and was surrounded by a lot of people many times that did. None of those things really mattered because no matter what people thought or said about me, I knew that God made me special and I could be there. And I just had to keep my eye on the ball. And I don't think that we're teaching enough young people today that they're special. I know we're not. When I hear these moms yelling at their kids, mother this and that to their kid, and I'm going to slap the blankety blank out of you, you little blankety blankety blank, and these kids are 2 and 3 years old hearing that, how are they ever supposed to think for 1 minute that they have 1 ounce of self-worth? And mom and dad, that's on you. That's not on the government. That's not on the man. That's not even anybody. That's on you. How you treat your children and what you put into how you raise them is 100% on you. And I tell you to take up that torch of responsibility. And believe me, one day you'll look back and be very, very glad that you did. But don't blame the world for raising your kids terribly if you're not willing to raise them yourself.
You know, it's interesting. When I see a child crying in the store, most people say, you hear it all the time, you know, why don't they discipline that child? But, you know, I never think about that because I know that this is not the only time that that child acts like that, is in the grocery store. So I know that you can discipline them all you want right there, but the truth of the matter is that's a systemic problem from something else. I hate to say it.
The biggest systemic problem is that little kid wants something and they're not getting it.
But
that's nothing the parent can do.
But you can look at the parent and you can see how they're coping with that, mm-hmm. which is not well.
Yeah, I after raising 4 kids myself and having some grandchildren, I understand that whole grocery store scenario pretty well. And you know, I think that all kids at some point will try you in the store. They'll ask you for something. They may sit in the cart and sniffle and cry a little. But the total fit throwing themselves on the floor, that's what mom and dad, you know, mom and dad are failing outside of the store, not just in the store. You know what I mean? I've got, my granddaughter is so precious. One of my youngest granddaughter, she's 2. And she has this thing now when you tell her no or you scold her. She literally walks across the room, turns her back on you, folds her arms, gets down and kind of squats a little bit and just stares in the other direction. And you'll say her name and she will not even give you the time of the day. It's her basically saying, I'm angry. But that's a lot better than throwing a fit, I guess. Mm-hmm. But she does. She just walks away. She did that last night. We were at the Prospect Pool for a joint birthday party for some kids. And I forget what happened. She was at the pool, and she just walked around the baby pool, got down and squatted and stared at the fence, and she wouldn't pay attention to anyone. But, you know, parents, why would parents not expect their kids to throw a fit when mom's at home screaming at them? You know, screaming never accomplished anything. Action does. And I know a lot of people really struggle with corporal punishment. But even in corporal punishment, there's a right and a wrong way. And there's a hard and a soft way. And there's a loving, a kind, and a disciplined way. And there's an anger way. And I think people, that's the problem, is people haven't distinguished between the right way to discipline and the wrong way to discipline. You know, my mom was telling me, I hear this all the time where mom will say, oh, they're doing this, that, and the other on their phone. Really? Take the phone away. Pick it up and take it away. And say, when you stop doing this or when you do your chores, I'll give you the phone back. But until then, you're not getting, oh, the fit they would throw. I can't do that. They'll go berserk. Let them go berserk. Take the phone anyway. If they go too berserk, stomp on the phone. Say, now you're going to earn one. No, seriously, we're not doing that today. And kids think they own the situation around them. Not all kids. I don't want to paint with a total broad brush, but I see it every day. I see kids controlling their parents. You know something that was never said to me growing up? Bill, we got to feel some time here. Something was never said to me growing up, other than my birthday once a year. Something, the words never came out of my mother's mouth. Honey, what do you want for dinner tonight? Never heard it.
No.
This is what's for dinner tonight. Mom had a list. She had a budget. We didn't have a lot of money, so that budget was pretty tight. And she would have six meals planned out. And then one meal was kind of a conglomeration of what was left over from all the rest. But the point was, we had the same thing every week.
You know, though.
But today, I see these parents, Scott. Oh, you don't want hamburgers for dinner? What do you want, honey? You know, do you want pizza? Seriously?
Never got that option.
I never got that option growing up. I mean, this probably give these kids we're giving kids way too many options when they need to learn discipline. So now they go into a job, and they got this boss. And he says, this is how you do this. You're going to do this way. And they said, no, I don't think that's the way I want to do it. And the boss looks at him like, what? You work for me, not you. Kid says, what do you mean? I've always made my choices. You see my point?
Mm-hmm.
Go ahead, Reeves.
Well, what I was going to say was, with this food thing, you know, I'll never forget. The food thing to me is baffling in a way, because I was out to eat with this couple that had a child. And the parents, I forget what they ordered, but you know, you get two sides in a restaurant, and the child got the sides as well, and everybody's having a good time, and the child decided not to eat, I can't remember if it was peas or what, it was something like that, but they did not want to eat it. Well, I'm looking over at the father's plate, and he hadn't eaten all his food either, but now he is pressuring this kid to eat the peas, and it's becoming very uncomfortable.
That was a control
it
issue
was.
Of the father.
And you know what I did? I just accidentally, in quotes, knocked the peas on the floor, because I got tired of hearing it. I knew the kid wasn't going to eat the peas. He didn't like the peas, and I was tired of hearing this.
Yeah, that guy's out there listening to this show right now.
Yeah, that's right. Whoops,
but,
sorry.
But, you know, I remember one time when we were kids, my brother was being forced to eat spinach, and which is ridiculous to me. If a kid literally can't stand something, you know, if they're just being picky because they want ice cream, you know, or they're going to get their way if they beg long enough and don't really, that's one thing. My brother was being forced, I can barely remember this, I was very young. And I remember he ate the spinach and he puked all over the place.
And
guess what? You know the benefit of that was? I was 4 years behind him and I was never made to eat the spinach. I like spinach today. I didn't like it as a kid. But I was never forced to eat liver and onions because I couldn't. I couldn't stand it. But the point is, you know, the whole thing of what do you want for dinner, honey? Or, you know, well, he doesn't want fish. So what? We're having fish tonight. Eat the fish. You'll get over it. You know, we always had one, you know, eat it or you're going to bed hungry because this is what we got. You know what? You learn to eat it.
You know, I think there's a line, though, and I think that's where the if you don't, I mean, there's things I'm not going to buy that I don't want to eat, that I don't like. And some of them are very common things. And it's just, and the kids are going to have that as well. The line is when the kid realizes that if I don't eat this, then I can get that. That's
right.
The difference.
There's the difference.
There's the difference.
But if they realize they're not going to get that, I bet they eat the other thing.
Right. And I think all parents really know what their kid likes and doesn't.
Do our families realize that in 90% of the world, kids eat the same thing every day, and it's usually very bland and nothing special? I mean, in most of the world, they have a steady diet of what they eat. My brother-in-law grew up in the Philippines. His parents were missionaries. And they had rice every day, day in and day out. And you know, my brother-in-law is now 71 or 72. Do you know he still wants rice with every meal? And it's been a real struggle because he's diabetic and, you know, the carbs. But, no, he's still rice. He loved rice. He was grew up on it. That's all they ate. I mean, they would have some fish, a little bit of fish with the rice. He still loves rice and fish. But the point is, we are so stinking spoiled in this country. Rip open the package and see what's next. And, you know, a lot of time, I didn't have to ask Mom what was for dinner. I knew what day of the week it was, and I could smell it cooking. And quite frankly, I grew up loving my mom's dishes. To this day, I wish she were here so she could still make a few of those. And we just have to learn, you know, this world, and we're about out of time. We got a couple minutes, and I really want to put this thought in because it's really important. This world still has beautiful things to offer. Families still have wonderful things. They can enjoy time together and do things together. We need to put aside the garbage. Look, I'm going to tell you, if you're out there, love your spouse. If they may be driving you nuts right now. You may be thinking nothing but divorce. But you know what? Make a decision. Look, this is my wife. This is my husband. I'm going to make the best of this. And I'm going to learn to love them. And I'm going to learn to be the parent I need to be. And we're going to parent our kids together because we love them and want the best for them. We're going to take some time, and we're going to go take them to the free museum in Marion. We're going to take some time and go get some cane poles and go over and fish somewhere, just as a family. We're going to throw some ball. We're going to take walks together. Folks, it's not that hard to start planting those seeds of your children, your family's destiny together, and a solid one, not a disjointed one that's falling apart, and everyone's got to grab for what they want, and that only lasts a while, then you got to grab for something else. If you start putting down roots that are bound in love and where you're supposed to be as God intended it, you're going to see the benefits from that. We've got to quit going for every little whim and thing that we want. And I'll tell you something else, you know, young ladies, make that guy respect you. Don't let him treat you like a piece of dirt. Men, it's the same thing with women. You know, don't just jump from couple to couple for crying out loud. You know, you've got self-worth out there. You know, make people earn your respect for a change. And there's so many things being lost today. Our violence in this country is not because we have too many things to commit violence with. It's because we have an attitude of violence. Do you understand what I mean? You know, one of the people that shot up a school one time made the comment that it wouldn't matter if I had guns or not. A 5-gallon gas can of gas is cheap, and all I needed was a match, and it would have caused far more mayhem. So it's not a thing of what we have to commit violence. It's the fact we have a violent attitude. And it's the fact that we're not happy people and we're not satisfied. And everyone feels like they've been cheated and they get angry. And honestly, if we've been cheated, the most thing that we've been cheated out of in this country today is decent parenting. That's the biggest thing our kids have been cheated from. I don't care how dirt poor you are, you can be a good parent. You know how I know? Because we were poor. My dad went out hunting for rabbits so we'd have meat on the table. I remember that stuff. We were poor, but I had good parents. You can be a good parent and have nothing. So I would encourage you parents to do that and be good parents. Great show today. Love all you guys. I'll talk to you next week.
Remember, you can catch this show on the website, wwgh1071.com, live every Friday morning at 11:10 a.m., repeated Sunday morning, 8:10 a.m., Wednesday afternoon, 3:10 p.m., and the Community Christian Fellowship Sunday service every Sunday at 12:15 p.m. Stay tuned. More programming right around the corner here on WWGH Radio.
Later.
You're listening to WWGH Radio 107.1 FM, LP, Marion, Ohio. The Talking Place. To legendary attorney and representative of clients such as O.J. Simpson and Dr. Sam Shepard, F. Lee Bailey.
Let's talk about that. The day the verdict came back,